of today. This should have been like 2 or 3 weeks ago for Yom HaShoah. I know we got pushed off for various events. But the tshuva I want to cover today relates to Yom HaShoah. It's a Holocaust tshuva. And more specifically, it actually relates, the reason I chose this particular tshuva is because it relates to a topic we covered earlier in the year. We spent a little while talking about different tshuvas of Moshe finds relating to Jewish identity. And we talked about clothing and names and the like. And so here's a selection of a few tshuvas. I'll talk about who wrote the tshuva in a minute. But a selection of a few tshuvas that discuss really about Jewish identity. And the tshuvas, I think, in terms of the Holocaust genre of tshuvas, we tend to focus on the tshuvas of the most like horrifying situations. So these tshuvas are not covering like these horrifying situations. I mean, it's obviously very dangerous situations, but you're not cringing when you hear these stories. It's more of an interesting tshuva because I think what makes it so exciting is that you kind of feel this very strong tension where, on the one hand, you should be like, it's obvious, of course they should do whatever they can to save themselves. And yet you see the fact that they're asking these questions shows that even in the moments of like the hardest peril, the moments of like the where it should be the most obvious thing to just do whatever you can for survival, yet they're still trying to upkeep halacha as best as they can. We'll talk about it in a second with the tshuva itself. But so who is the tshuva written by? The tshuvas I sent are written by a person named, the tshuva is called Kuntres Emek HaBacha. It's written by a person named Rav Shimon Efrati. I don't know him so well, I just happened to find the tshuvas, but Rav Shimon Efrati was a rabbi who grew up in Galicia, in modern-day Ukraine. He ended up working as a rabbi there. During the war, he ended up, for various reasons, ended up being in Siberia. So he escaped the war in Siberia, but many of his family and community, you know, obviously perished during the Holocaust. After the war, he came back and served as the main rabbi of Warsaw. And that's where most of these tshuvas come from. It comes from rabbis who had survived the war, were kind of telling him, like, oh, here are all, like, the horrifying cases we had. What should we do? And there's actually a very particularly famous tshuva that he has about a situation. It's not the tshuva we're reading, but I'll just mention it. There's a tshuva he has about someone they were in a bunker together, like a group of, like, a family or maybe a few families together. And there was a baby who was crying as the Nazis or the local soldiers who were investigating were coming. And so someone very quickly out of haste trying to, you know, save themselves, covers the baby's mouth with a pillow to, prevent the baby from crying out. They were saved. No one, you know, the Nazis did not discover their hideout. But unfortunately, they found out right afterwards, tragically, the baby had suffocated from the pillow. And so this person asked this, like, horrifying question to the rabbi afterwards, am I chayav for, you know, Hariga Bishogeg, for killing someone unintentionally, and, you know, all the potential issues of galut and whatever else for, like, all the general halachot for killing accidentally. So it's a really, like, horrifying tshuva. The answer is actually fascinating because he suggests that actually you can consider the baby as a rodev, because the baby is endangering everyone's life by crying out. Really, really interesting tshuva. We can cover it maybe a different time, but really, I love it.
There's a TV show called Holocaust where they had several, anyway, in that show, they did the most if they intentionally killed the baby. The baby wouldn't be quiet.
I'm sure those decisions had to be made multiple times.
People, so I don't think they would ask the Shiloh, but
I'm sure those type of decisions happened a lot. Yeah.
Probably got that from having heard of this.
Yeah. So this question is not as horrifying. It's not, you're not gonna start cringing over the question, but I do think it's a really interesting question because the focus is about whether or not you can dress or you can appear to be non-Jewish. And you might think to yourself, well, obviously, like, why can't you do whatever you can to save yourself? But if you think about it, there's three main exceptions to, pikuach nefesh, the three exceptions. One of the exceptions is avodah zarah. And we covered it came to the context of Jewish identity, right? To what extent are you allowed to pretend that you're not Jewish? Pretend that you're deceiving someone, looking like you're a Christian or, you know, or the like. And so these tshuvas actually deal with these issues, and I think it's a really interesting question to think about. The nature of Jewish identity, even in these moments of peril and these moments of, you know, horrifying situations. So the tshuva begins as follows. I'm going to start from the questions. Nishalti begetter kovna. It's like the small part, the smaller part. Nishalti begetter kovna. That's the following question from the ghetto of kovna. Three questions. A imutar livroch etzal komri akum liot etzlam betoch. Bitor goy, לעשות ככל מעשים משפה ולחוץ, כגון נשא את השתי והערב, ולך בית התפילה שלהם, האם הוא בזה כמודה בעקום? Question number one, am I allowed to go to Christian priests and appear in front of them as a goy? Right? Can I look in front of a Christian priest? I can dress like a total non-Jew. I'll even like dress up in the clothing. I'll wear like a cross, like shti ve'erev, which is a Hebrew word for the cross. Right, so I'll dress in a big. I'll have a big cross around my neck, and I'll go to their churches, and I'll really act like I'm not Jewish. That's question number one. I'm allowed to do that. Question number two: Ha'im mutar livroach Yisrael livroach la'akum la'avod and lo v'lo marlo alav shu akum lasot k'maseh manal. Question number two is a little bit more powerful. Can I go to a non-Jew and just work for him and just tell him that I'm not Jewish? I just identify myself, you know, as a local non-Jew. Question number three: Ha'im mutar Yisrael la'azov ha'geto v'lador mechutz ha'choma ha'idei shikana pasport al shem akum v'natan shmunato b'tocho k'dei latzil atzmo. Question number three may be the most, parv and question of, like, should be obviously permitted. Are you allowed to buy a passport or a fake passport that has a non-Jewish name? So your name is, you know, Yankel, and you change your passport to say, you know, Christopher, I don't know, Santa Maria, whatever, you know, something very, very clearly Christian. Am I allowed to do that and have this fake passport? Those are the questions of his that are asked. So what is his answer? The answer is as follows. Biur shela. Ketuv mechaber b'shulchan aruch yordea she'asur lomar shu akum kidei shelo yargeu aval lishnot mishbosh aval lishanot malbusho shelo yikireu shu yudi b'shat egzera mutar kevan she'ein omer shu akum. So he says, quotes from the Shulchan Aruch. He says, the Shulchan Aruch passing is as follows. To say that you're not Jewish, to actually state out loud, I am not Jewish, that is forbidden. It's forbidden even at the penalty of death. So he has no permission to say you're not Jewish. But We did see a bunch of these tshuvas. In order to, if you are allowed, are you allowed to change your clothing or to give the misimpression to someone else that you're not Jewish, right? You're dressing a certain way such that you're not actively saying you're not Jewish, but people will assume that. So that would be allowed in situations of mortal danger. Right? You are allowed to give the misimpression. If Gimel Mishin Yitchayev Mita Mutar Livroach Meit Akum Natsil Atzmo, in the next sif, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, you're also allowed to go to a church to save yourself. You're allowed to go to the physical building of a church. Uvataz mevar she beim lo yase shumaser rav shev yatase ein ze ela harchakat anezek motar b'kuach nefesh. So Taz explains based on the same principle. It's all based on how active are you being. If you're actively pretending and parading around as if you're not Jewish, as if you're Christian, that would be problematic. But if all you're doing is you're just passively like allowing others to make that assumption, and you're going even to the building where the church, but you're not actively saying I'm not Jewish, you're just saying like this is a sanctuary, I just want to be saved in this sanctuary, so that would be permitted. Yeah.
Could you say without answering the question, are you Jewish, that I'm an atheist?
Interesting. I think it's probably a similar issue actually in terms of making that statement.
You could be Jewish but still be an atheist.
It's an interesting question. Is atheism considered to be avodah zara?
You're not praying to anybody.
Well, the 13 Ikarim is recognizing Hashem. It's one of those. So if you say you're an atheist, you're putting yourself in a category where that's another issue.
Yeah, but that might be called like a I'm not sure if that's Avodah Zarah.
Avodah Zarah, though.
Yeah.
There are a lot of non-Jews that might be atheists, and that doesn't mean they're of the Avodah Zarah, whereas if you're a Christian, you might be in Avodah Zarah.
So. Yeah, it's an interesting question whether or not. I think there is some discussion in posting about whether. Yeah. Yeah, the problem is that while the Meiri is great, I mean, it's like certainly something that like we all like love to latch onto, we don't really pass in like the Meiri. And I'll put it like this, in a sense that there's a distinction, we're not really learning Hilchos Avodah Zarah, but in short, the way we tend to paskin is that even if we tend to make the following distinction, which the Rifa makes is actually explicit in that sugya, which is as follows. It could be that there's a different definition for Avodah Zarah for Jews and non-Jews. And then it could be in terms of like Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, like what non-Jews obligated. So they're also one of the mitzvot they're obligated in is the Avodah Zarah. But what is the definition of avodah zarah for them? So many suggest that avodah zarah for them could be even something which is called shituf, something which is it's the God plus something else, right? So we have the same God as the Christians. They just add something else to their God. I mean, the specific denomination may have a different additions, but it's generally, you know, it's avodah zarah in a certain way, as opposed to for us, the way they often explain is that shituf would be prohibited. So considering we're often talking about Catholicism here, which is, you know, different from Protestantism, most people can really do think it's like defined as avodah zarah. Even Protestantism, it's still technically avodah zarah for most poskim. You know, so it is an interesting question, but I think at the end of the day, like, that's the way we tend to treat it. But Interesting. I looked that up. I'm not sure. That's an interesting point. Thank you. Okay, so let's keep going in this tshuva. So he is quoting the poskim. So he says, Nimsam Bivorah, it's at the bottom of that first paragraph. Nimsam Bivorah, Shemutar Livroach Lebeit Akum, Svegam Lavodet Tel Akum. So in terms of question number two, so it seems like you clearly permitted to go to a non-Jew and to work for him. So therefore, in terms of answer question number two, you have to work for a non-Jew, and you're acting as if you're not Jewish, that would be permitted, because you're not, you know, you're giving a misimpression, you're not actively saying you're not Jewish. In terms of the first question, am I allowed to dress like a non-Jewish, wear a cross, that would be prohibited, because there you're actively, you know, saying that you're not Jewish, that you're Christian, and that would be problematic.
What happened if you wear a collar?
I don't know. Yeah, it's probably similar to their clothing. If you look like an actual priest, it'd probably be problematic.
It's misleading.
Yeah. Well, I guess it depends on the extent of it. Yeah.
No, sorry, I'm Catholic, is what it yells.
Yeah. Right, but it's not. But if it's misleading in one way, you're actually going to see later on, he has this really interesting tshuva about about misleading. But I think if it's just misleading, it's a little bit different than if it's.
Question that's kind of almost fundamental, maybe not right. It's the fact that they're trying to kill the entire Jewish people. Does that play into this at all? Because if nobody could do some of these things, that could eventually lead to the entire Jewish people being wiped out, as opposed to just pikuach nefesh for one person. So
it is an interesting, it is an interesting question in general. There are some tshuvos written about talking about, like, we talk about, like, you know, the main categories. We talk about, like, three exceptions of avodah zarah, kilo raiot, and shfichut damim, and those are kind of like the general rule. But it is true that there are some tshuvos written about, like, what happens if there is like a risk of mass genocide or something more severe. You know, would we be allowed to transgress more things in order to save Am Yisrael? So there are some tshuvas about that. Or if Cook has like a tshuva about it. And it's Siv has like a bunch of stuff he's written about it. But the truth is, most of these tshuvas just don't cover it. I mean, at the end of the day, yes, there is like, you know, everyone, there's like a huge population of Jews going to be dying. But I think post-Poskim felt that even with like the massive loss of like Jewish culture, they're still aware that there were going to be a lot of Jews who were going to survive. I mean, even if half the population gets decimated, which is a crazy, absurd number, you're still going to have the other half. So they tend to be more conservative on that perspective.
Well, but also in a time of Shema, in a time of like persecution, actually these rules are even more strict in the Gemara. Like they tell you can't eat shoelaces, you can have to be killed over that. So it could be that even things that were not normally commanded about, if that's what they're telling you that this is what you have to do, and it's something small to desecrate religion, but for them, that's what they're, you know, it's that, then you might have to be killed over it.
Yeah. I think that if you think about in terms of their own definition of Jews at the time, and they define Jews, you know, you have like one grandparent who's Jewish. So that makes it, even if halakhically we don't consider you Jewish or, you know, for whatever reason, like that create such a huge importance in terms of, you know, what state we have to, where we have to really, you know, dig in our heels and really keep to our Jewish identity. Yeah, so actually it relates also to the next, the third question, which he wants to really deal with a little bit more at length, which is the question of the passport. Can you get a passport that says you're not Jewish? So he says as follows, this is the second paragraph. Ve'al davar shela ha-gimel, imutar liknot passport shel akum, yesh ladun alf be'etzim kniyat ha-passport, ubet le'ul harototo, be'etz arar le'nsel yidei b'mashi yachshavu shu akum. There are two questions with regard to the passport. There's one about buying the passport, and then the second question is about, can I, once I own the passport, can I now use it to protect myself? He's going to analyze each of them separately. So first he wants to quote, V'nireh dehinei ha-rambam seif ha-mitzvot katav zeh l'shono. He wants to quote from the Rambam. And Ram says as follows. I'm going to mute you, Bella, so just we just hear you in the background. So he says as follows. Hashem shitzivanu lekadeshit shemo, v'hu she'amru v'nitkadashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael, v'inyan zot ha-mitzvah she'anachum mitzvim l'parsem ha-munah hazot v'amitit b'olam shelo nifchad behezek shu mazik. He goes from the Rambam that there's a mitzvah of v'nitkadashti, of a commandment that we're supposed to sanctify God's name. And he explains part of the sanctification. So part of this mitzvah, Rambam goes on to explain, and I'm not reading it, I'm reading it a bit quickly, but part of the mitzvah Rambam goes on to explain is that there's a mitzvah to die for Kedushat Hashem. Right? The mitzvah is not just that Pikuach Nefesh has certain exceptions, right? That I'm not allowed to, you know, to not get killed or to violate something in order to avoid transgressing something. But actually, the Rambam quotifies that there's actually a mitzvah, there's some type of actual positive value in dying for the sake. It's not just that, like, you know, you have to die. There's something positive in dying for the sake. And so he wants to say as follows: Mivuar befeir shemichoyevim l'misur tefein l'mita afilu b'ofen shu ma'amin b'kadosh baruch hu rak mita'el akum shiachshov shekofer chasam b'kadosh baruch hu. So what emerges then is that according to this Rambam, it sounds like you're obligated to kill yourself, to die in a situation even where you're just tricking someone. You're not actually motive odazara. You're not actually worshiping, you know, a different god. You're not actually saying, like, I believe in this, I'm not being baptized, you're not doing any of that. Just the very fact that you're tricking someone, it sounds like from the Rambam that would be problematic. According to this, therefore, shekone ha passport, in our situation, when you are buying the passport, afshu etzlo rak lehatzil atzmo v'ene modeh ba'akum ulam hu mat'e bazeh ta'akum shechoshim shu kofer chas v'shalom. So it sounds like in this situation to be problematic, because even though you're not actually saying I'm not Jewish, you're not worshiping, you know, the Christian God, nonetheless, because of the very fact that you're buying this passport, and this passport looks like you're not Jewish, you're changing your name to Christopher, or, you know, whatever it is, to Maria, so then it certainly looks like you're actually, trying to trick them, and that would be problematic. However, ulam, lo dominino dinam de Rambam, de halo benino dan, et salmishe kona passport, halo akum yodea, shehu ena modeb akum klal, raku etzav etachbula li nasayideze, nimsa de etzem, hiniacha passport, ein shum isur. So he says as follows, he says, at the end of the day, though, this whole analysis may be wrong, because if you think about the situation, who are you buying the passport from? Right? Like, if you're buying a passport from a Jew, so the Jew obviously knows you're just using it as a means of trickery. And if you're buying it from a non-Jew, like the forgers, like, you think they think you're actively, like, converting? If you're converting, you would go to a church. You wouldn't be, like, using a fake passport, you know, and, like, asking a forger to make you a fake name. Like, that's obviously what you're doing is you're just trying to use a means of fake transportation. No one thinks you're actively, you know, becoming Christian. So in terms of the making of the passport, there's really no problem, because no one involved in the making of the passport is being deceived. Yeah, they're doing it for the money. They're just being, yeah, absolutely. They're not, so it's, so certainly in the making of the passport, there should be no problem. What about the other problem, the problem of showing the passport? I have the passport already. Can I now show it? About benogei leharot and the passport, this is the third paragraph. Be'etzara, lichora yesh le'esor. V'litmot l'mashevinu me'sivra mitzvah le'rambam, de'lo b'mashim arat the passport, choshim shu akum. So he said that his first pass on this issue in terms of showing the passport is that showing the passport would be indeed problematic, because it fits very well within the Rambam statement we just read previously, that if you are trying to trick someone to thinking you're not Jewish, then that would be a problem. So his first pass is to suggest it would be problematic to show the passport. However, Amnam, Nired de lo dami klal lehatam, he wants to say that this situation, showing the passport, can't be exactly the Rambam situation either, because Because then you have a contradiction between the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. Because in the very first paragraph, we quoted the Shulchan Aruch that made the following rule, that as long as you are deceiving them, not actively stating they're not Jewish, but in a situation in which the postum kachba is trei mashma, where you can have two different meanings, right? Like I make a statement that has a certain vagueness to it, and it could be interpreted in a few different ways. And so if I make a statement, you know, it says, we're going to see a little bit later, he has this really great statement. He says, where you say something in English, and you say, we're going to see this a little bit later, but he has this expression where you say the expression kin yid, or kin yud, which in German sounds like I'm not Jewish, but in English, in Hebrew it says kin yud. In Hebrew it sounds like, yes, I am Jewish. So if you make a statement like that, he's going to argue later, that's going to be fine. And so anytime you say something which has double meaning, even if you're quite certain, I'm certain they're going to understand it one way. So even so, that's going to be permitted. Let me give you an example of like how to relate to this. Let's say, for instance, there's something that I used to do, Chatai the Maskir Hayom, something I used to do in my childhood a lot. One of my chores often would be, when I was a kid, would be to throw out the garbage. So my parents would ask me, did you throw out the garbage yet? So I'd often say, yeah, I'm throwing out the garbage. And in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, like next week, I'm throwing out the garbage. It's not like tomorrow, but like, you know, in a week from now. Right? They had a certain, like, the vague connotation of what it could mean. Obviously, my parents thought, you know, I'm throwing out the garbage now. But in my mind, I was like, oh, like, I'm being a smart aleck here, and I'm really mean into intent later on. So in general, in terms of lying, that's not a very good thing to do in general. But in terms of this prohibition of Avodah Zarah, so the way that Shulchan Aruch seems to poskin is that as long as you have a legitimate two options, two possible meanings. So even if they're going to misunderstand you, that's going to be okay. And so this Rambam then seems like it contradicts that statement, because Rambam seems to say anytime you deceive them, even if, you know, it was possible to not be deceived, it still be problematic. So he has to. So he ends up suggesting the Alkin Sarich Lomar De Lo Dami Klal Hani Tre Mili Dadadi. You have to reinterpret the Rambam. Rambam cannot be understood as we explained it until now. The Rambam, hello, Myri beofen shiodim shu Yisrael rak atam mode lamunatam ubaze asur bechokavne de iser baze who lo mitzad amase shelo shemode beakum rak baze hu adin hu nitashti. He has to explain that this din of the Rambam is not actually a din about avodah zarah. It's actually something special about nitashti. There's, as I mentioned, there's a special positive mitzvah of sanctifying God's name, and the Rambam is talking about this special positive mitzvah of nitashti. But you don't have to die for the mitzvah of Nikdashti. Nikdashti is telling you there's a mitzvah, positive value in dying for Kedushat Hashem, for sanctifying God's name. But there's no actual obligation. There's nothing that mandates you have to die. And so he's saying that the Rambam's not really relevant. If you want to, you know, die on this, you know, higher madriga, to live by this higher means of dying and not tricking Jews and non-Jews in any capacity, that's something you can do if you want to fulfill that mitzvah. But you don't have to do that, right? That's not going to be a prohibition. And therefore, in terms of what you have to do, in terms of showing the passport, you would, in theory, be allowed to follow the Shulchan Aruch and be allowed to use something that has double meaning. Aval psak haShulchan Aruch shevin lemala shechoshim shu'akum melida ve'enam yodim klal shu Yisrael ha'isur sham rak moshu b'nei b'akum v'zeh shafir psak da'vidavka b'gavne shu'oseh ma'aseh. When it comes to the Shulchan Aruch, specifically if you do something that makes an active statement, if you're just passively doing something, then it's permitted. Vayin Bashach, Vizelashono, the Afilu, Bishata Shmad, Enu Asur Elak Sheakum, Makrimoto, Virotsim, the Kofo Lavor, Avalu Bosh Begat, Asuri Kibig the Akum, Shari, the Azleka Hilashem, Shari, Ena Akum, Makrinoto. And he quotes from the Shach, explicitly writes that even Bishata Shmad, even in terms of times of persecution, you're not allowed to actively convert, right? Wouldn't be allowed to be baptized, but to just dress in a way which tricks them, that would be permitted. And therefore, based on this analysis, you could suggest that showing your passport would be permitted because, you know, you're not actively saying that you're not Jewish. You're just showing them a Christian name or something of the like. And just showing a Christian name, that's not actively showing them a problem. It would, and therefore, based on this argumentation, it would be permitted to use a passport debt. Oh, Afilu, however, he wants to kind of hedge his bets. He says, Afilu, Efshar Lomar, Demash Marit Passport, Zehu Gufa Havi Masa, the Efshar De Asur, Vitarch Iyun. He ends up leaving it as a question. He says, you know, when it comes to showing the passport, right, in some way that kind of is an active, you know, an active motion of saying, my name is Christopher, you know, I'm clearly Christian. So showing the passport might in itself, he argues, that might be an action, that maybe that even the Shulchan Aruch would think that's problematic. So he ends up hedging his bets, but at the end of the day, you kind of can see the Shaila here, where he's really, you know, going back and forth as to whether or not it'd be problematic. He thinks at the end of the day, for the most part, it's mostly about tricking someone, and that would be fine. If it's something more active, it'd be problematic. Any comments or questions?
Passport picture head, you're wearing a cross around your neck.
Yeah, presumably that would be more problematic if you were wearing a cross in the picture. Yeah. Yeah. Let's go on to the next tshuva. I'm not sure if on the copy I sent you guys. Yeah. Yeah, that would be, yes, according to Shulchan Aruch, that would be problematic. Yeah, exactly. That would be close to Shulchan Aruch. As long as Nevat Da'at is, the technical standard of Nevat Da'at tends to be things that, you know, even if they have multiple meanings. So technically, it's not actually accurate. But if it's something that wouldn't have multiple meanings, yes, then Nevat Da'at would be usher for Avodah Zarah. Well, because here we're talking about Avodah Zarah. You're right, in terms of like the general halachah of Gneva Dat, right? Gneva Dat, a good example is, I don't know, I invite someone to my meal, knowing full well that like they don't actually, I don't want them to come, but I'm doing it out of nicety, knowing that like there's no risk because, you know, they're going to say yeah, they're going to say no because they already have a meal invite somewhere else. So I say like, you know, hey, do you want to come over to my Shabbos meal, knowing very well they're not going to be able to come and I don't want them to come. And so I'm lying to them just because I want them to make them feel better or maybe, you know, make myself feel better, but I don't really have any desire to bring them along. So right then, in terms of, like, that pure halacha, it's kind of like an additional level of lying in terms of, like, standards. And so we tend to paskin only between Jews. But in terms of this issue, here we're really dealing with the question of, like, of misrepresenting yourself as a non-Jew in the sense that you're worshiping, you know, a Christian God. And so that issue of Avodah Zarah, that relates also to the way that non-Jews perceive us. That if non-Jews perceive that we have joined their religion, a religious cause, that would be very problematic. That would be akin to Avodah Zarah itself. Yeah. So actually, I agree with you. He's actually going to make the point that you're making, but actually to suggest that it'd be more machmir, in the third tshuva we'll see, where he's actually going to make the point that in general we talk about like the three exceptions when you're allowed to kill yourself, die for like the sake of a mitzvah. So usually in those type of situations, or we talk about a situation that was called onus, where like you're forced into doing something, usually there you have two options. Either I'm going to actually kill you right now, or I'm going to force you to do something. And in this situation, you're right. You're not actually being forced, you know, to become non-Jewish, that nobody's putting a gun to your head, like, convert, or I will kill you. In fact, if you convert, you may be saved, or maybe not saved, and it's kind of divorced from the actual issue of the death. Like, they're not actually connected directly. And so he actually suggests that based on that, you may have even less leeway in terms of how you're supposed to act. And we'll see in a second what that means. How, like, we'll see the consequences of that, I guess, in the third tshuva. We'll see briefly. But I want to move on to the second tshuva, where I think he readdresses kind of this issue of tarti mashma, of a statement that has multiple meanings. And it's actually really interesting. Let's look at what's called Shela Dalet I don't know if it's the second or third page for some of you. I think I scanned the wrong order. But She'ela Dal, that should be the top of the page, page 9 Aleph. It says as follows. Nishalti v'geto kovno, Yisrael she'yesh lo shem sh'mishtameh k'shem ha'akrum. K'mo sh'shchiach tuva ben Yehudi Ashkenaz. So what if a person has a name that already sounds like it's not Jewish? Like, it wasn't necessarily chosen to trick them. That's just, you know, the way he was born. He was born with a name that sounds not Jewish. So, I don't know, nowadays, you'd be born with a name that sounds like waspy, I guess. You'd have like a name like, I don't know,
Johnson
or something, sure. I don't know. I'm sure there's plenty of... Robinson, yeah, right. Something that sounds, yeah, something that, you know, it wasn't necessarily done to trick him. It's just, as is well, pretty common, you know, you have a name that, that plenty of non-Jews have. Yes, we did talk about that. Yeah, exactly. This is very much related. That's why I want to talk about it. So, V'yeshlo passport, because he has a passport that has his name, Omni Kono Milchama, Mikin Pnias Takana, Birsona Lechto, Betoko, Gama Otiot, Reish Kuf. He wants to add, so this individual wants to add two letters to his passport. He wants to add letters, Reish Kuf, I don't know if in the Hebrew, presumably in Polish or whatever language he's writing. And Reish Kuf will stand for Roshay Tevot, and we're not sure him, Roman Catholic. That I'm going to write on my passport the letters RM to present the statement Roman Catholic, or not RM, RC, I guess. RC, Roman Catholic. And such a way that people will think that my passport suggests, you know, more than my name being Robinson. They'll also think like, oh, RC, he must also be Roman Catholic. He clearly is Christian. So am I allowed to write those letters, even though I'm not actually writing Roman Catholic, I'm just writing Rashi Tevot, I'm just writing the initials, is that permitted?
Everybody knows what the Rashi Tevot mean. What's the difference between writing Rashi Tevot and writing the whole word, words?
Yeah.
You could say, oh no, that just means I come from the name.
So that's actually exactly what he's going to suggest, that maybe it's not clear what that means. It could mean something else.
Put stuff like that on their passport anyway. I mean, if passport, some countries used to require you to put your religion on your passport, right? So if that was the case, then that would be clearly deceiving.
Not necessarily. If you're putting RC, you're not actually stipulating what RC stands for.
A number of choices of religion. I mean, you didn't put your BD on there, so.
That's really the truth. Yeah. Well, I guess this passport he didn't have. Whoever this person didn't have to.
German.
Yeah, maybe different places. Yeah.
World War II soldiers, some of them didn't put their religion on the dog tags, especially Jews, because if they got captured, you know, they felt that they would be tortured.
Yeah. So
and that's a big thing now with J.J. Schachter, what he's doing. All the graves he's finding in Normandy that have crosses on them that are clearly Jewish names.
Right.
And he's changing that. It's a very long, slow, long process.
Yeah. So either way, here's his question. Yeah. Oh, okay. So so that would fit within the, you know, this set of tshuva in terms of having the name already. That doesn't sound Jewish. Yeah. Yeah. So either way, let's get to his answer. So he suggests, I'm gonna skip the beginning because the beginning we saw before earlier, and he makes the same point about, you know, the tricking. He quotes from the Shulchan Aruch. Paragraph number 2. V'hine b'ninon didan efshar lomar demutar k'mosher iti b'sefer Torat Chaim. He suggests they would be permitted to do so. Based on, he quotes someone and suggests that be permitted. He quotes the following story. He heard about the story about someone in a previous generation, that they asked him in times of persecution, you know, maybe times of a pogrom, they asked him straight out, are you Jewish? And he said to them, Kin Yud, Belashon Ashkenaz. And he said it in German, in a way that Kisvurim Heim Harsha'im, and they, the people asking him the question, the non-Jews, they thought, Shemeshiv Lehem Blashon Ashkenaz, he's responding in German, She'enu Yehudi, He's responding, Cain, I believe. My German's pretty bad, but I believe Cain means no. And
actually, kein.
Kein?
No.
Kein, okay.
It kind of doesn't work unless they were in a country where they mispronounce it. Kein is yeah.
Yeah, he's pronounced it like
kein is, there is no.
Yeah. Okay, so he speaks it yeah.
All right.
Okay, so he was Litvish. Yeah, my German's pretty. My Yiddish is not very good. Yeah, okay. So either way, the story goes. I'm not sure exact pronunciation, but he said something around kind, cane, whatever it is. That sounds like it says no. Confirm her shemesh mishim lashon Ashkenaz ino Yehudi v'nitzel, and therefore they thought that's fine. They saved him. Aval kavanato haya b'lashon hakodesh kane yud. But he meant to say in Hebrew, yes, I am Jewish. Right, a little bit similar in terms of like the trickery to not so far apart from Yaakov's statement with Anochi Esav Bechorecha, that I, comma, Esav is your Bechor, that, you know, that famous Rashi defending how Yaakov lied to his father. So it's a question where you put the comma. So here too, it's a question where you put the comma. Do you put the comma after Cain, or do you have to put the comma at the end of the statement? It's a similar type of trickery. So either way. Well, yeah, he was probably trying to trick him. Yeah, in this particular situation, this person is clearly trying to trick him. He clearly wants him to be, you know, deceived. But he's saying in such a way where, in theory, the words he's saying are actually true, and he's not actually purporting himself to be not Jewish. He's just, you know, he's aware that this person is going to be deceived to his benefit. And therefore, either way, that's the story he quotes. And therefore, Emek Abacha or Shimon Efrati wants to extrapolate from this story. When you write in your passport letters Kuf Resh for Roman Catholic, it's possibly you're writing to say Kain Romar. They're trying to say that. Actually, not sure what this means. Anybody knows Kain Romar? Rumar. I'm not speaking Yiddish. Anyway. Oh no, I'm not Roman. Okay. Very clever. So you're saying Kain Rumar? No, not Roman. Not Roman Catholic. That would be the clever way of tricking with what Reish, what RC would mean. Yeah.
Some Yiddish Hashem, they don't even know if you're Jewish.
No, you're certainly not.
If they don't even know if you're Jewish, I don't know that you have to establish. You know, you don't want to lie, but why do you have to say that you are? I mean,
yeah,
you
actually, it's so,
but you don't have to say that you are.
Yeah, it actually comes up to the next tshuva, so let's actually go over that right now, because he actually does talk about that. It's a really interesting question to think about. Right, you can definitely differentiate in all these discussions of Avodah Zarah. There's certainly a lot of room to differentiate between a situation where someone knows you're Jewish, and then all of a sudden, you know, the next day you're seen wearing a cross. Right, that's very different, and it's just like no one knows who I am. I go to a random village, no one knows who I am, and I purport myself, you know, as Christopher. Right, that's a very different statement, because, you know, people don't realize you've changed from being Jewish. It's not really the same, like, Chil Hashem, the sanctification of God's name isn't really the same. And so the consequences of the action are not going to be seen the same way. But I think in terms of the consequences, perhaps there may be a distinction to be made. He's going to explore in a second. But in terms of, like, whether you're permitted to do so, you know, ab initio, milechatchila, are you allowed to purport yourself in this way? So it doesn't sound like he really wants to differentiate between these situations, because you know you're Jewish. And so for you to purport yourself as a non-Jew, even if they don't know about it, that could be very problematic if you explicitly state, like, I'm not Jewish. I believe in the Christian God.
It also could be something, a distinction between taking your passport out and, like, making an advertisement versus just have it in your pocket. So if someone were to search or say take out your passport, you just take something out.
Yeah.
Because you're just responding to the request to remove your passport from your pocket.
Yeah.
So you're not actually advertising anything. You're just following their response to do that. That everyone has to take a passport out. So I just took something out of my pocket. I'm not saying it's mine. I just took it out of my pocket.
Yeah, it's actually a really interesting suggestion. I mean, it would fit well within his that first trivia we saw, where he tried differentiating between two situations. Situation A, can you make yourself the passport? Situation B, can you show the passport? So I guess you would say there's situation C, can I have the passport on me and not actively display, but kind of be forced to display, or that, you know, they rummage through my bags, my stuff, and they find my passport. And in that situation, I'm not actively stating I'm not Jewish. They just happen to see, oh, same face. As on it, you know, Christopher.
You're not saying it belongs to you.
Yeah.
But somehow it just.
They're making that assumption. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That'd be a similar type of question. Interesting. Yeah. Let's actually look at the third tshuva. I know we're covering a lot of tshuvas, but I think it kind of gives us a little bit of a range in terms of the scope of this issue. This one, you know, it's a narrow issue in terms of dressing like you're not Jewish, but in terms of the range of potential problems that it comes up with. And so he wants to deal with the following. This is the third tshuva, what's called She'ela Gimel. It's like starts with a bet on the top. I'm not sure what page is on for you guys. It's the next, it might be the third page or the second page.
Page
100. Yeah, page 100 on it. So he asks the following question. It's very related. V'yishli stapek be'elu ha'ovrim chas v'shalom al zem mifnei she'asakana asu k'nir le'elk ma'asim v'achkar chazir l'klal Yisrael imekablim otam v'li shum nizifa v'kabalot o takanot. If someone ends up dressing like they're not Jewish, and they end up doing everything, even if it's forbidden, right? They dressed up like a Catholic priest. They wore the cross. They wore, you know, the black robes with the collar, and they you know, went to mass every day, and, you know, they did whatever, and they were baptized. They did everything they could to look like they're not Jewish, to save themselves during the war, something which is, you know, obviously very much understandable, something, you know, that, you know, we all would probably in an instant do ourselves to save our skin. Very understandable. So the question becomes, what happens now after the war? Now they want to move back to Israel. Or they want to move to Israel with everyone else. Do they have to do some type of tshuva process? Right? Did they do something that's considered to be wrong enough that there's some type of tshuva they have to do to, you know, repair themselves? And how does the community respond to someone like that who actively dressed like they were Catholic and now wants to come back within the fold? Right? How does the community respond? Does the community impose certain, you know, what's called the knas and penalties upon them? I mean, maybe they have to do certain things to be able to come back into the community. Or no, we say that, you know, these were extraordinary situation. You know, they're certainly not culpable for any of the decisions they made, and therefore we're going to open arms, accept them back without, like, any, you know, exceptions. Or
they would have gotten the Misa problem. We don't have the Midash anymore. So, I mean,
So I'm not sure they would be killed for this.
At least we would have to bring a chatas.
Yeah, maybe bring a chata, but that's kind of the question. Do they, are they chayav a chata in this situation?
What if nobody knew about it? You know, can they hide it?
Yeah, okay. Well, I think the question is both on, in this case, on can you, you know, hide it from all the other Jews and be also, like, not just a community response, but in terms of you. How do you feel about yourself as a, you know, as a Jew after all this? And part of this is also like a self-catharsism. Like, we talked about last week when we talked about the mental health when Yoni Rosenzweig came here. So we talk about the fact that even if, you know, you might get the heter from the rabbi, it tells you you're allowed to listen to music on Shabbos because it, you know, helps you with your depression, your anxiety, whatever you have, right? You yourself might still feel really guilty about doing so. And so part of this tshuva is not only for the community members, but also for the individuals involved, because, you know, it's not so easy to come from living for 5 years and hiding, you know, in the church and pretending to, you know, to go to mass every single day. And then the next day to all of a sudden take off the robes and go back to shul. That's a very difficult transition. And so I think part of this tshuva is addressing not only, you know, the community, but also the individuals themselves. Like, how should they comport themselves? How should they see their past behavior? Like, what their attitude should be. I think that, like, if you ask people, I think when it comes to Avodah Zarah, we don't have the same, like, visceral reaction we would have with other things. I think you're right that in terms of, like, our own personal visceral reaction, we would certainly be much easier for me, if someone put a gun to my head, for me to, you know, do Avodah Zarah than for me to marry my sister. Like, that'd be certainly much more difficult, you know, in that situation. I think you're right, viscerally, but I think in terms of the halachic process, the Avodah Zarah is just as severe. Which makes it much more difficult, if anything. If anything, all of these sacrifices that people are doing is just that much more impressive, that they're doing so for the sake, you know, of Avodah Zarah, something that doesn't feel as viscerally significant.
I think, halacha, though, Avodah Zarah, the act of Avodah Zarah, right, the machshava was very, very important. So the problem is nowadays, we don't actually have that machshava. We don't have any desire for it, so we don't. So to us, we're lacking the machshava. So we're doing the act. So machshava was very, very important about an avodah zarah. So we may not even be very good at doing avodah zarah anymore.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I mean, my question is, in the 40s, I guess, were they also like, or was their machshava then in terms of how they acted? But I do think it's true. I mean, I don't know exactly in the 40s and exactly who's asking the tshuva, but it is true that, you know, think about, like, you know, you still go today to Poland or to go to Warsaw today, and you'll still find that, you know. Yeah, so actually there, he doesn't actually bring it entirely, but actually there, when it comes to Murano's coming back, there is a whole literature in terms of what they have to do to come back. There's even a whole literature of, I'm not like a historian, but I've heard like talks from historians that talk about, there's a whole literature of tshuva written about whether or not Jews who like Murano's coming back, whether they have to go to the mikvah. Mm-hmm. Because even though on a purely technical level, there's no reason to go to mikvah, it's not like we believe in baptism the same way they do. But like there was a certain sense that like maybe there's this way you have to mechaper yourself to go to the mikvah, you're like a ger of some sort. There are all sorts of tshuvas about doing some type of symbolic act in order to, you know, signify that you're converting back from, you know, your previous status. So there is like a whole literature about it. So I guess let's see what he says here in terms of these people here. So he says as follows: Bira Shela, Lashon Aramba, Milchot Torah. He quotes V'chol mi shenemar bo yerag v'yav or v'avar v'lo nerag. In general, the Rambam paskins as follows: if the law states, the halacha states, that you have to die instead of transgressing a particular avir, a particular sin, if you're avar velo nerag, and instead of dying, you end up transgressing, right? You fell to your, you know, very understandable, you know, human basic desire to survive, and you decide to survive instead of, you know, listening to God's mitzvah, which is very understandable. Harezeh mechalel shem, that person is considered to be a person who is desecrate the name of God. And nonetheless, Rambam paskins as follows, that even though you did something wrong, clearly you did something wrong, nonetheless, because in your situation you did it not willfully, you were coerced into doing so, then you will not be killed for doing so. You will not be punished. Beit Din will not give you malchut even. It won't even give you lashes for what you did, right? In the pasuk, when it comes to, he said this almost homiletically, but the pasuk, when it comes to Arayot, says, well, na'ara lo tased davar, the young woman who cheated, who should not have slept while she was married with someone else, nothing should happen to her. She did it against her will. She didn't have a choice in the matter. V'cheni Barama, likewise Rambam somewhere else, Paskin is a similar statement. I'm going to skip a little bit. Same idea. V'kachka to v'tosvot, likewise in Tosvot. Skipping to the middle. Chazina nizeh, the v'ones kazeh, ein over rak ha-mitzvah taseh, shel miktashti, afilu b'davar shirag v'yavor. The only thing you've done wrong is you failed to fulfill the positive commandment of v'niktashti. You didn't do this positive commandment of dying al kedusha tashim. But in terms of what you did wrong, right, we're not going to consider it to be like an avera that you actually now have to do tshuva for. V'lo yavor mikol makom im hu zahir min daig b'mitzvot kishar Yisrael v'yisrael kasher lachol tavar rekav ram mitzvot tashin tashti yikos from the rivash tzim r'tshuva chazin en mizeh shbe'onas af mitzvot tashin shikol shashim ein alav shum davar rak she'avar al mitzvot shin tashti v'hari yikos yisrael gamur. You are completely Jewish, you did nothing wrong. That's kind of his first pass. So his first suggestion is, even if you dressed up like a Christian, you went to mass every day with a cross, you are still going to be defined as Jewish, and you will not be penalized for what you did wrong. However, he wants to make the following suggestion, someone already pointed out earlier. Ulam yish lechalek, the Rama v'arivash, ma'ri she'ones hu kemo she'kafui shed, she'machrichim oto ve'kofin oto lasat davar, ve'ein lo itza lihimalek mizeh. The situation that the Rama and the Rivash are talking about is one where someone puts a gun to your head and says, you know, bow to this idol, or I'm going to kill you right now. That's the situation. Aval b'inenu shelokiach ha-pasport osek masem hu eno od ones gamur. In our situation, though, you're not actually being forced to display a fake passport. You're not actually being forced to die. Right? In this situation, you're trying to evade discovery. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to evade it. And since you're trying to evade the risk, you're not actually yet in risk, right? You're trying to prevent that future risk. And so it's not clear that you would define it the same way. It could be that you're not considered to be coerced the same degree, to the same degree, and therefore your actions are going to be judged on a higher level. Right? You're not defined as being coerced yet. You're trying to prevent future coercion. He quotes the Minchat Chinuch as a discussion about this similarly. He quotes Minchat Chinuch, who makes almost exactly that point, that you can differentiate between a situation where you're trying to literally save your skin versus a situation in which you're trying to prevent a situation of danger. Right, these two situations are not the same, and therefore your situation may not be defined as coercion. As such, next paragraph, ulefi kol advarim ha'elo nimarim, nimsa b'nidon didan, shemi'atzmo asak kol ha'pulot ha'masim lehinatzal masakana, efshar shuv lamar tekatzinon oto. And therefore, based on this analysis, it's possible that there would be room to suggest that we really should be penalizing this individual, that perhaps they need some type of catharsis, some type of active, you know, penalty that that the community would impose upon them. Right, nowadays, we don't give ancient Nadim, we don't give, you know, malchut, nobody gives lashes. But maybe there's some type of, like, chayr, self-imposed chayr we'd impose, some type of way of, like, clarifying that this individual needs to do some type of tshuva, some type of kapara, you know, community service of sorts in order to be recuperated and brought back into our community. However, he makes a third pass to kind of, you know, re-challenge this whole suggestion. He's really debating both sides here. Umnam lefidat aminchat chinuch sham defarhesia haynu daf betoch asara mibnei Yisrael avo betoch arbe akum lo mikriy befarhesia. He says, however, this whole sugya, this whole discussion about when you're chayav to kill yourself and what's defined to be as a chil Hashem, right, which is the main issue here. When are you defined as having desecrated the name of God? So desecration of the name of God is defined to be before Hestia. Something has to be done publicly. And publicly is defined for most poskim to be in a minion of Jews. You have to be in front of 10 Jews. If, though, the moment that you are desecrating God's name, all you are doing is you're in front of non-Jews, then that's not defined to be as desecrating God's name. It's not going to be as problematic. And since in our situation, you're really not in front of Jews, you're only in front of non-Jews, it's not going to be the same problem. As it follows, at most, you may have violated some positive commandment of a say of Be'avsat Hashem, but in terms of what you've transgressed, you haven't actually transgressed the problem of Chil Hashem. You haven't actually desecrated God's name. Concluding that he's unsure about this topic because at the end of the day, these people, they didn't, you know, you're not demonstrating in front of Jews that you're not Jewish. It's just when you're at the passport control and who's, you know, checking your documents, it's going to be a bunch of non-Jews. So when you're being checked in front of a bunch of non-Jews, it's not clear that you're really, you know, being Mechal Hashem, you're not really desecrating God's name, and it's not going to be as problematic. And I thought there was a different point where he makes the other point someone mentioned earlier. I'm not sure where it is. I remember reading it earlier. But he makes a point somewhere else, that especially in a situation where we don't know you're to be Jewish beforehand, right? You really can differentiate between a situation in which people knew that you were Jewish and then you converted, you were baptized, versus a situation where, you know, no one knew you were Jewish to begin with. Your name was always, you know, Robinson. Your name was always something that looked like you were just like a, I don't know, a regular Scottish non-Jew. No one knew you were Jewish. And therefore, it's not going to be as problematic. And so I guess I'll take any questions or comments now, but the reason I bring these tshuvas, I think it's, they're both like really interesting to share, just a general, you know, perspective about the Holocaust, about survival. I think that these particular tshuvas don't highlight the harrowing parts of the Holocaust that I mentioned, but I think really highlight kind of like the day-to-day survival, the basic decisions that they had to be made. And you can kind of see like the intensity of anyone asking these questions, you know, how devoted they were to God, these type of questions that I personally probably would never have asked in my life. I thought would have been obvious. Of course, you're going to get yourself a fake passport. And yet they're asking themselves, even in these moments of peril, they're asking these questions. They're asking questions of how do I return to the Jewish community? You know, things which I think really demonstrate, you know, how difficult the Holocaust was beyond, you know, the horrors of the ghetto, of the death camps, even just the reality of escaping pure life. You kind of can see that through these tshuvot. So I think they're like a meaningful and useful lens. And as I said, they also relate to a topic we explored at length through Rav Moshe's tshuvos about Jewish identity, about dress, about clothing, and wearing kippahs in the workspace, you know, all sorts of things about Jewish identity we talked about, or wearing, you know, clothing, you know, women wearing non-Sneez clothing that may look like they're non-Jewish. We spoke at length about it. So I think this tshuva fits very well within that larger context. Just the stakes here, obviously, significantly higher. Yeah, question now.
Shil Hashem. You made it sound like Shil Hashem is only done in front of Jews. But nowadays, let's say we've got one of these rabbis who's a pedophile or somebody like that, or the woman in Israel is a pedophile, and everybody says, forget about what the Jews think. The Goyim are going to look at that and think that's terrible. It's a Shil Hashem. So most of the time nowadays, people refer to Shilul Hashem as things they're doing that's going to make the Goyim not like us. So that technically is not what the Shil Hashem is, you say.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. We do talk about Shil Hashem specifically usually with non-Jews.
So it's a shanda for the Goyim, the Yiddish.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's a larger topic in terms of what exactly for Hesia and when you need for Hesia. But the basic idea is that there's, is that it kind of needs both. It kind of needs to be that the other Jews are aware that you're transgressing it. But at the end of the day, it's primarily the main audience is going to be the non-Jews that now think you're joining them, think you're doing something negative, you're desecrating God's name. What will the nations of the world say about your actions and the like? But it's a little bit of both. It's a long discussion in and of itself. So,
right along. And in the Nevi'im, it's also a discussion of like when you're amongst the Goyim, like, right, there are so many different nevuah, but you'll like embarrass yourself, like you're just going to be a little, some, you know, there's a disgrace that you're going to cause amongst the Goyim.
Yeah.
Different Nevi'im and different prophecies, but some of it is also about like how we're going to ourselves embarrass ourselves by things that we do amongst the Goyim.
Yeah, there's certainly a higher standard in some ways living, you know, in the diaspora amongst a bunch of non-Jews than there are living in Israel where, you know, they're not going to know what happened to us. There's certainly a certain higher standard that we have to be upheld to. On the other hand, in Israel, there's a certain higher standard because everything gets publicized, you know, anyways. And so it's automatically going to be identified as Jewish. And so there's a certain higher standard they have to do as opposed to me. I can commit a crime here and no one's going to say, oh, the Jewish rabbi did it. They'll just say, like, oh, this random New Yorker committed. Yeah, I mean, obviously it depends on the issue, but yeah.
But there also, I think some religions use it as fuel. It's like, oh, that's why you were rejected. These are rejected people. You know,
yeah.
This is how they behave.
Yeah.
And so that's just fuel for like our.
I mean, that's like the whole Christian ideology, you know, pre-Vatican, you know, Vatican II. The Jews deserve their gallus. You know, they deserve that.
I actually believe that.
A lot of people.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, everyone.